Hello, I'm Brett Marshall.
And I'm Zeke Boyat.
And I'm Justin Bakke.
And this is Sound the Foghorn. Hello, and welcome in to part two of the Sound the Foghorn podcast. We wrapped up our last part with talking about the draft, and now we're going to move into a little bit more of a touchy subject, but a subject we think is really important, and that is Matt Dumba and JT Brown and their involvement with protesting, Black Lives Matter, and diversity in the NHL. So without further ado, let's jump right in to part two. Let's move into a little bit more of a serious topic here. This is something that just mainly Zeke and I are going to touch on, but we've seen some wild players recently come forward to kind of give their voice on the Black Lives Matter movement and diversity in the NHL. To two players in particular, JT Brown, who wrote a piece over at NHL.com, which if you haven't read that yet, I would highly encourage you. He gives some really good perspective. And then also Matt Dumba, who gave a fantastic speech prior to the puck drop, I believe on, was it Saturday that he gave the speech, I believe?
Yeah, I think that's right, yes.
And then, of course, his silent protest throughout the playoffs. So I want to start with a little bit about this, that JT Brown piece. Zeke, did you get a chance to read that? And just
Yes, I've read it a couple times.
Yeah, but just, like, let's just talk about that a little bit. I think just, like, the coolest part for me, I think, was just really getting inside the head of what it's like to be a minority hockey player in the NHL. I mean, JT Brown was a guy who knew he was kind of a grinder fourth liner, and he knew, and for those who don't know, to give a little context, it's basically JT Brown talking about his protest when he played for Tampa Bay Lightning, when he raised his fist back in, I believe, 2017. And basically he just talked about, he knew that if he raised his fist, that he knew it could be the end of his NHL career, and that he might be a career NHLer because of it, but that he felt like he needed to raise his voice. And I thought that was a pretty powerful statement from him. Zeke, did you have kind of some other takeaways from that at all?
Yeah, I think, you know, like you said, obviously, you know, when you do that kind of thing in any sports, as we've seen with other athletes, it especially if you're a fringe player, you know, it unfortunately puts these guys' careers on the line just to do what's right and to stand up for what they believe in and for, you know, to be so that everyone can be treated equally and fairly the same. And I think, you know, the big thing that I take away from this article is that, you know, these kind of conversations are uncomfortable, and they should be. Because a lot of less, like, you know, I've played hockey my whole life. You know, I'm white. I've never had to deal with walking into a locker room or into a room and being the only one that, you know, no one else look like me or look the same as me or come from the same background as me. And so I think it's important to have that conversation to understand where a guy like JT Brown comes from. And, you know, and because people, when they hear about, like, the stuff that he said he's went through and a bunch of other players have said, you know, you at first don't believe it, because with the way a lot of us are, like, you know, we will never experience that stuff. And so a lot of people will just brush it aside and say, eh, whatever, it's just a one-off thing. But it's important, I think, to understand that, you know, that does happen at all levels of sports and in life and in hockey. And so, because, you know, like in the story there was, I'm not going to get into specifically, but a couple of things that he read in there were, I mean, just horrible. And especially when he said, you know, he's dealing with this his whole life since he's playing hockey, you know, when he's 8 or 9 years old, which is terrible and should not be a thing anywhere. And so, I don't know, I just think it's important to have that, those difficult conversations. And by reading that article, it kind of, I think, can help a lot of people just open their minds and to understand where he's coming from and why he does what he does. And in the end, it's like for a good cause. It's for that, so that everyone's treated equally everywhere in life, and specifically in hockey, and so that it can be a more diverse and welcoming sport for anybody who wants to be in it. Because as we all agree, it's, you know, it's one of the greatest games on earth. And while I think the community and the hockey world is great, there is definitely room to weed out some of those, you know, some of that racism and bias that still does exist in on teams and in hiring and all that. And so I don't know. I know it's kind of a ramble, but I think my thought is it's just important to listen to his perspective and listen to people of color in hockey and just in general life and just listen to them and their experiences and, you know, and understand and try to understand what you can do better.
I'll add one thought on that. I just think they're just trying to leave the world better leaving it than when they came in, you know, and that's one aspect of it.
Yeah, and 100%. And just to put in perspective, like, I think the Washington Capitals recently just announced that they are making some initiatives to be more active with the minority community. And I didn't read too much into it, but I saw something. Basically, the Washington Capitals lead the NHL in history. I think it's going back to like 1975. Lead all NHL teams in amount of black players that have played for them, and it's 11. And I think that just speaks to, I think we get, like, we love hockey. We know that. I mean, you look at primarily where the players come from, North America, Europe. It's predominantly white areas, but there are people of minorities that live and are populations that are growing, of people that aren't white. And there's just basically these players, they just want more recognition, understanding, and respect that people have. JT Brown cited just people threatening him, threatening his family, his daughter. Basically threatening to kill him, calling him the N-word. And basically he said, I knew that was coming, but it just reinforces belief that he did the right thing in speaking up. And I think that that takes a lot of guts to do that and to say that. And then we saw teammate Matt Dumba kind of take the first really big step for any NHL player when he gave that really powerful speech, something that he memorized. Again, if you haven't seen the speech, regardless of your views on it, I think it's, like you said, it's important to listen. Dumba memorized that speech and then kneeled during the American National Anthem and then continued to raise his fist just like JT Brown did during the National Anthem throughout the playoffs. There was a decent amount of backlash from those on Twitter wondering why maybe some Wild players didn't do more. And I don't want to make this political or anything, but have your opinions about what you may on that. But I think personally, I maybe would have liked to see a little more from the Wild. We don't know what happens behind the scenes, but I think when a teammate steps up like that, it would be good to show, it'd be good to just to see some kind of support rather than just hear about it and what's happening behind the scenes.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I see some people, you know, it's Twitter. You don't want to just take what a couple people on Twitter say as the general opinion. And, you know, I don't agree with necessarily calling his teammates, you know, these cowardly people and, you know, terrible friends, teammates, whatever, because they didn't like... Okay, you know, I think we do know some examples of things that his teammates have done behind the scenes to support him. Like, we know Jonas Brodin and Alex Galchenyuk went with him to his speech and had him practice and were encouraging him and all that. And, you know, that's great. And a lot of times it's the stuff behind the scenes that you do when the camera isn't on in front of you that has the biggest impact. But at the same time, since, you know, Matt was the first player to openly speak and take a knee and do something, it would have been nice if you at least could get at least just one or two of his own teammates to join him, you know, and show that solidarity in public like that. And so I understand both sides. You know, I don't want to, you know, get people too angry either way, you know, but I understand both sides of the coin here. And I don't know, it's from that perspective it's tough, but you know, like you said, it just took a lot of guts for Matt to do that. And you could tell when he's giving the speech just how nervous and how emotional he was. See it in his face that, you know, that was one, very hard for him, but two, that it means a lot to him. And, you know, at the end of the day, like, people can agree, whatever, on kneeling, whatnot. I personally have no problems with it. You know, it's not, you know, that's just my opinion, but he's ultimately, again, he's just doing this for the greater good of everyone. And so that, you know, to bring more recognition to the problems that minorities face in hockey and in life. And so, I don't know, like you said, it would have been nice to see some more teammates join him. And while I don't think that makes them bad teammates or cowards or anything, it would have been nice. And just in general to show that extra support in front of the cameras. And, you know, I don't know. This is kind of, again, another uncomfortable conversation that, you know, that needs to be had. And so, overall, just to sum it up, that it was a great speech. It was a great moment for him. And, you know, I think it just was great to finally see a player in the NHL stand up and do something for once. And unfortunately, it has to be put on the minority players to do that, which, you know, you wish didn't have to be the case all the time.
Yeah, and we did see, I believe it was Robin Leonard.
Tyler Seguin, right?
Yeah. Tyler Seguin. There's another Dallas Stars player whose name is escaping me, and I believe another Vegas player
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That all took knees in solidarity too. And Robin Lehner had a really good quote. I believe I can't remember, so I'm not going to quote it, but just about kind of how his views have changed over time, and just how listening has helped change him. So that's basically what we're preaching here. We're not preaching right or wrong, but just the fact of see these guys, hear these guys, understand their perspective, and then form your opinion of where you come from. And that's totally on you. I do want to read one little passage here. Had a chance to talk to Elon, I don't know his last name, at MapexDrummer26 on Twitter. He's a Mexican-American, huge Wild fan, big supporter of the show. And I just got a chance just to get his perspective on just being a minority, being a hockey fan, just kind of what the Dumba stuff meant to him and the inaction or lack of action from the teammates too. And this is what he had to say, coming just from a minority perspective. He said, "It's a matter of not just talking the talk, but also walking the walk. The issue with Dumba being the only one is that it sends a message to those that do not want the game or society to change because they do not think there needs to be, is that it comes off like, see, even his own teammates think he's in the wrong. They don't want to protest with him. Also, he really does kind of stick out. He's alone out there, which I'm sure Dumba has felt the way before with racism he's had to deal with already in his life. No kneeling or raising a fist in the air or putting a hand on Dumba's shoulder are not going to solve the issue of racism, but it does show the entire world that when the spotlight is on them, that they will be there to support their teammate, their friend, their family, their brother. It's using the spotlight and their privilege to the advantage and helping to get more eyes and attentions to the issues in the sport and in the country." So I thought that was really interesting perspective as someone who's white, just to get you know, a minority perspective on just what Dumba raising his fist and the, you know, the lack of action comes from. So we know that's a touchy subject, but we really thought it's something important to talk about because obviously Dumba's a part of the team and JT Brown was the first one to do it. And it's something that's, and obviously all of this happened because of the George Floyd, which obviously happened right here in our backyard in Minneapolis. So hopefully that wasn't too painful for you guys and that you got something out of it, learned something. We'll share the links to both the Dumba speech and the JT Brown article if you haven't had a chance to check those out as well. So let's move forward here. We're doing pretty good on time, so I think we have a little bit of time here. Let's reflect back on the rest of the playoffs so far. We'll talk about our predictions a little bit, but just what's your guys' reaction to kind of the format and how the NHL has really, what I thought, done an absolutely fantastic job with their return to play?
It has been really good. It's, you know, of course, way different than it has been before, but we're seeing, you know, kind of compare it to the NCAA basketball tournament. You're seeing like 12 seeds move on, beat teams, you know, teams that may have probably weren't going to be in the playoffs, beat teams that may have been in the playoffs. And it's just kind of showing the parity in the league, whether, you know, of course some teams are better than others, but, you know, there is parity.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's been great. Now, obviously you wish the fans would be there in some of these games, like, you know, that Toronto-Columbus game last night where they came down.
Oh, man.
You're like, because you can just imagine, you know, what it'd be like in the arena or outside, you know, and at these big parties that they have up there, you know, if people were allowed to. But I think overall, I mean, yes, you notice it sometime when they pan the camera to the arena and it's empty. But, I mean, you know, really, it's hockey. It's great. To be honest, the no crowd really doesn't bother me that much. And the fact that they were able to come up with this and do this in Edmonton, Toronto, you know, basically in 2 weeks before when they were set on going to Vancouver and Vegas, I think is very well done on their part. And I mean, just in general, that they were able to even get this tournament in and so far get through with no positive tests, I think is, you know, that's a credit to the hard work that everyone's done, from the league office commissioner to the team workers and to every player too, for being safe and responsible so that, you know, they can have a chance. And so far seem like they will get this tournament in.
Yeah. I think what they've been able to do in such a short amount of time has been incredible. The fact that I still I don't believe now almost, what, 2 weeks in here, week and a half, there's been zero positive cases of COVID-19. So the NHL has done an awesome lockdown job of of keeping the players safe, keeping the staff safe. And I think that says a lot. I can't think of the guy's name who put all this on, but there's an article about The Athletic. Yeah. All right. Check that out, about just kind of what went into planning all this. Is pretty awesome. And the on-ice product's been fantastic. Zeke, like you touched on, we've had some upsets. I mean, it's been nothing short of what we're used to in the playoffs. Just there's the team that you think will win handily goes off. There's been some criticism about, well, now all these stars are out when they should have been in. But I mean, you look at last year, I think every single wildcard team, if I recall correctly, knocked off one seeds. I mean, it's really no different. It's just now it's in a round of 24 instead of a round of 16. But personally, that's what I love about the NHL. There's always parity. Predictions basically mean nothing because you can look at it from every angle analytically or eye test or whatever you use to evaluate. And you're just, you'll be left just shaking your head going, who would have thought this would happen? And I'm really looking forward to the finale of that Columbus-Toronto series. Oh, yeah. It's been absolutely wild.
It has been.
And I believe there was a tweet I saw today about just like the goal scoring sequences in that series. And basically it's like one team will score like 2 to 3 goals. And then it'll be another, like Toronto does stretch where they scored like, this is over multiple games that scored like 8 straight goals. I think that was coming out of game 2, like into game 3 or something. And then Columbus battled back. And then just to see like in game 3, Columbus down 3-0, battles back to tie at 3-0, wins in overtime. And then to see Toronto do it on the brink of elimination yesterday, was just, it's amazing. A blast. And it's, and to know that this is just the start and that now we have a round of 16 still to go.
Yeah.
Let's go, baby. Like, I'm so excited for the next round. It's been great.
I'm sitting here watching the Philly Tampa Bay game, and man, you really hit it on Philly, Brett.
Hey, I got one thing right. So speaking of getting things right, while we're talking about predictions, let's just reflect back on them quickly. So we can laugh at why predictions don't matter. We'll just kind of go down the list here about how we did. Starting with the Pittsburgh-Montreal series, swing and a miss by all of us there. We all picked Pittsburgh. Zeke and I had a clean sweep. Justin, on the other hand, did have it in 4. So we got the number of games right. So we'll give him some credit for that. But 0-3 there as a group. Carolina and the Rangers. Zeke shaking his head this one. Justin and I both took Carolina. I took him in 4. Justin took him in 5. I was expecting that Shesterkin would be the starter from day 1. Mm-hmm. If I knew it was going to be Lundqvist, I probably would have said in 3.
Yeah.
Zeke 0-2. Justin and I 1-2. Islanders in Florida. Hey,
we got one. You got one.
Yeah. And Zeke got it perfect in 4 games as well. I had it in 2. Justin had it in 5. Columbus over Toronto in 5. I still have hope on that one, even with the games right. You guys both swinging a miss there. Well, in the games, I should say. Zeke had it 4. Yeah. Justin had a clean sweep. So that'll be a big decider tomorrow to see which of us gets to brag to the other. Edmonton and Chicago. We screwed up there again. I had a sweep and Zeke had a sweep. In favor of Edmonton, and Chicago did it in 4. Justin had that series in 5. Nashville, Arizona, stick taps to Justin. He picked Arizona in 4. So he got that one dead on the head. Zeke and I both had Nashville in 5. And I want to talk about that series a little bit too, because Justin, do you kind of remember why you picked Arizona, just to kind of refresh the listeners a little bit?
Yeah, I was kind of telling you before the show, I feel like Arizona's kind of always had Nashville's number, even when I, you know, kind of lived in Tennessee or was trying to live down there. My wife and I went to a playoff series. It was around 2012. Arizona was playing Nashville, and that year Arizona took them down too, and it just seems like one of those teams that has their number. I just went with my gut on that, because that seems to be the case more often than not.
Yeah, and I think from the parts of that series that I got to watch, for the most part, they did look like the better team too, and they were getting nice contributions from guys up and down the lineup. I thought Phil Kessel actually finally looked a little bit more like the guy that they traded for, and Taylor Hall was great, and they got some good contributions from young players. And then Darcy Kemper was a beast.
Oh, yeah.
I think he had something like 49 saves, I think, in that game. So,
yeah, really good.
Man, that would have solved the Wild's goalie problem.
Yeah, would have.
and like I mentioned, too, and was pointed out to me, John Chayka, the former GM of the Coyotes, fired. Not Kyle Dubas. I don't know why I said that, but thanks for whoever called that out. I forget who it was, but we will make mistakes, but we love being called out on it, so we can correct it. But I just figured they might have a chip on their shoulder, too. And like I said, I had a tough time picking the winner of that series. And it ended up in Arizona's favor. And now I believe they get to face, I believe, the Avalanche, if I recall correctly.
Yes. Yep.
And, of course, we all picked Minnesota in five. Sad face there. And then we all picked Winnipeg as well. I'm going to give us the benefit of the doubt on this one. Because of the injuries to Mark Scheifele and Patrick Laine, if I would have known they were injured in game one, I would have picked Calgary all the way. But tough break for the Jets to come in thin already and basically have your two biggest offensive threats both go down in game one. Let's talk a little bit about the Scheifele injury. There was a little bit of controversy on the hit from Matt Tkachuk. I don't know if you guys saw it. Do you have an opinion on it, whether or not it was dirty, more accidental?
Yeah, I don't know. For me, I know Tkachuk has obviously a deserved history of, you know, being a bit of a cheap shot artist. But I don't know. From what I remember, it seemed like it was just kind of in my opinion, they ran into each other. His leg kind of just went flying and the skate just happened to, you know, go into the back of his leg. Now, like I said, he just, you know, with his history and a lot of things, he won't get the benefit of the doubt. But from my opinion, I think Paul Maurice was maybe a bit overacting, that he was maybe more frustrated that he lost his one of his better players than, because I don't know, from what I could see, I don't know how he could go into there with the plan that he was going to get him with his skate blade in the back of the leg like that.
I think it was kind of a freak thing, and I hate to give Tkachuk the benefit of the doubt because of what happened at Tampa and just kind of his history, but I think it was just kind of a freak thing.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I think I know Tkachuk has a rap, like you mentioned, Zeke, but when I watched the replay, it looked more like his skate kind of caught, and he's, you know, I think he's trying to slow down and basically not board him.
Yeah.
I think he was trying to avoid making it worse, and I think it was just more of an unfortunate result. Much like we saw with the injury to Jake Muzz in the Toronto series, he took a little bit of a cross check, but then he just kind of stumbled, fell awkwardly into a guy's knee, and had a pretty scary what looks to be either a neck or a head injury. You're hoping the best for Jake Muzzin, and that whatever's wrong, that's the only issue with these playoffs, is just everything's going to be just unfit to play. We're not going to get any specifics,
but
very clearly head or neck. They brought out the stretchers, so we're hoping he's okay. But I think, again, like you guys said, just kind of a freak accident, as bad as a Tkachuk can be sometimes. And then finally, we had the play-in. You guys both, congratulations. You did pick the number one in the West. Vegas today with their overtime win over the Avalanche. A little bit of a bummer for me. I saw Colorado tie it up. And then another guy that the Wilders have, Alex Tuck, able to put in the game winner to seal the number one seed for Vegas. Colorado gets the number two. And then we'll find out 3-4 between St. Louis and Dallas. And I didn't realize this about the Dallas Stars. They haven't won a game since like February 26th. I think it's like 14 straight games going back before the pause.
Wow.
Crap.
That's insane. I didn't know it either.
Yeah.
So I was pretty surprised when I heard that. And then in the East, we each had a different winner. It will not be Boston, unfortunately, for Justin. And Zeke and I are watching intently here. At the time of this recording, at this exact moment, there's 12:22 left in the third period. Philadelphia holding down a 3-1 lead over the Lightning. So my Philadelphia gut pick could come to fruition for me, or we could see a dramatic comeback like we saw a couple times from Tampa Bay here, and it could go in the favor of Zeke. So that's our predictions. Basically, I think each of us got like two or three,
and
a couple of the games were right. But hey, that's how we love the playoffs, is because they're pretty unpredictable. So
that's
the fun. Any other thoughts from the just kind of the playing around so far? Any particular moments or things you want to discuss surprised you, or should we move on to the mailbag?
I think I'm
good.
All right.
I guess,
go ahead. No, go ahead, Zeke.
No, I was just, you know, just for me, I know they play the certain games, you know, these round robin games, you know, in the primetime spots on the national television because of the TV ratings and all that. I get that. But it is a little frustrating that they'll put those games and all the great times and push, you know, the excited games, the games that, you know, really matter the most till, you know, later in the night or at like 11 or 12 or 11 in the morning. So, you know, that was maybe my one gripe with the whole thing. And I don't know. Nothing too bad though, other than that.
Yeah, I agree with you there. The fact that had the Wild forced a game five that they were going to still play that at 9:45 tomorrow would have been a little surprising, especially considering like Dallas and St. Louis are basically playing for a 3 or 4 seed. What do you freaking do? Put them at 9:45.
Yeah. But Also, just
go ahead.
Well, are we going to hit on Miko, or are we going to save that for next week?
Sure. Let's make me sad, and we can talk about Miko for a quick second before we jump on the mailbag. I can start, for those of you, I'm sure it got pretty good traction. Miko Koivu likely probably played his last game in a Minnesota Wild uniform and did not get probably the end that he wanted, but... I did pen a little letter to him just to kind of summarize it. For as long as I can remember, basically, since I've been a Wild fan, Miko Koivu's been my favorite player, and a lot of the way I grew up playing hockey and a lot of the things that meant a lot to me, including my number and being a captain and being a two-way center, came from just following Miko. And I know he's gotten a lot of flack from fans about his contract and how he slowed down, but he will always be my favorite hockey player, guy I looked up to, and... sucked that, you know, he on that opening faceoff, he does what he does best and won't even know who wins a faceoff, and it just 11 seconds later, it's in the back of the net. And I think if you haven't read the Gamer from Russo last night, he had a really, really good, like, 4 paragraphs just kind of how Miko was after the game. And it just feels like that was it. And it felt like he knew it too. And it sucks, but he gave us a hell of a career. His number, in my mind, should 100% go up into the rafters.
Yeah, I agree 100% on that. And, you know, I think for me, the main reason that he never really scored a lot. As a team, they never, you know, won any championships, or, you know, in himself individually never really won awards. Although, if you ask a lot of people, if he was in a different market, not in Minnesota, he'd probably have at least a Selke or two in trophy case now. But, you know, I think my... just main thought is, and it's from a tweet from me last night that I'm where I said it's obvious that how much playing for the Wild meant to Miko. And, you know, the fact even this year at the trade line and years before, I'm sure he could have gone to another team somewhere else that, you know, would probably offer him a better chance to win, seed, and get a Stanley Cup. But he was, and especially this year by not waiving his no move clause, it was so obvious how committed he was to leading and playing for the Wild no matter what. And I just think that alone is very admirable, and just that, because he's been the face of the franchise for, you know, 10, 12, 15 years now, and it's going to be definitely very weird to, you know, tune into Wild games probably next year and not see him out there, that's for sure.
Yeah, it'll be tough. You know, he's, you know, of course, my all-time favorite. He's been the captain for the past 12 years, and when you think of the Wild, you think of Miko Koivu. I know, like you said, Brett, people have talked about how he slowed down and stuff, but he has been the face of this franchise and leads the, you know, franchise in all-time assists, points, plus minus, and he's always faced up against the top players and still had a career plus minus of plus 70, so that just kind of shows you how good of a two-way player he was. And as you guys know, my son's name is Miko. It's kind of where we got the idea for the name, even though it's a family name too, but you know, it's just not the way you wanted to see him, you know, go out.
Yeah.
You knew it probably was going to be good no matter what, but it just, like, just the fact that he's on the ice, won the face off, and did what his job was, and it just, it went south. That's such a bummer. But the Sound the Foghorn podcast, we are Miko Koivu stans. We love what he did and are very thankful for him. So also, if you'd like to participate, I've just enjoyed kind of paging through, since Miko was my all-time favorite player, to challenge people to basically tweet out their favorite memory or thank you to Miko Koivu using the hashtag thank you Miko. If you're a Mikko Koivu fan, just search that hashtag and just kind of look at just some of the memories people have, some of their favorite highlights. The one I shared still is one I remember just vividly. It was against the Detroit Red Wings in overtime, and Mikko takes like a one-timer. It gets stopped. He wins the race to the corner against Nicklas Kronwall, who has just been known his whole career as being this hard hitter, this physical guy that puts people on their butt. And Mikko Koivu gives him this like cold shoulder. He's like, Kronwall tries to come up behind him, and Koivu just like throws his right shoulder, and Kronwall just goes like flying backwards. It's in Detroit. The fans are up in arms. It's totally clean. He just protects the puck. He walks out front and then hits Devin Setoguchi in the back door for the game winner in overtime. I just remember watching that going, holy shit, what a play. Like, it was just the coolest thing I remember. And like, it was such a sweet Mikko play. What's your guys' favorite Mikko memory?
I don't know. I mean, like I said in a tweet last night too, I first got into the Wild about 2010, 2011. So I don't remember some of those more early days, kind of like you just talked about. But I don't know, for me, you know, I posted a video of this in his 1,000th game this past year against Dallas when he scored on his usual backhand shot in the shootout to win the game for them there. I mean, I've been to several games where he scored like that. I mean, that's when you think of him, that's another one of the plays that you generally think of. And just, I don't know, with that and just the way how passionate and intense he is, you know, is just, that's just my the most memorable part for me, is just how passionate of a guy he is about a game and to being good on both ends of the ice at the same time.
Yeah, a little bit older than you guys, about 10 years older than Brett, I think, and about a little bit more than that than Zeke. But I remember watching his whole career, fortunate to be able to do that. And, you know, I'm with Zeke. When I think of my favorite memory, it's him scoring the game-winning goal in the shootout in the 1,000th game. I don't think it kind of could have gone any better for him in that game.
100%.
How loyal he is, and it's pretty amazing.
That's great. So like we said, hashtag thank you Mikko, share your favorite Mikko memories. We'll retweet some from the podcast account, some of the ones that have been out there as well already. A ton of them are on my timeline too. If you want to go peek in there too, I was a little sad last night and just looking for all the Mikko love. So so thanks Mikko. Do you guys think he comes back from a team next year, or do you think, like, if he's done with the Wild, he's going to Finland?
I think he's done.
I think so too. I could see him maybe staying in the front office something, maybe scouting in Finland or something. But
that'd be pretty sweet if they brought him back.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's wrap this show up here with a couple mailbag questions. We were proactive today and were able to answer kind of a couple of them as we went along. So. Let's take a look at what we got left. We just touched on Torch Twines about thoughts of Mikko Koivu and potential. What happens? This is a good question here, and we'll probably get to this more some off season. But we won't go just too much into detail. We'll just kind of talk about just names in general. But what are some players? He calls them farm players. We'll go Iowa Wild players that need to be up with the big club next year. Maybe that you would like to see in a Wild uniform next season.
Well, go ahead. Oh, you go ahead.
I'd like to see Kakanen become, you know, a full-time NHLer.
Yeah, I think for me, it was Nico Sturm who he played in the last two playoff games. And, you know, he did score his first NHL goal too. I think he played surprisingly fast. He's responsible defensively while, you know, still having a little bit enough offense to keep in the NHL. So I think he's a guy that was going to have, because of just how hard he works and how responsible he is, that will have a pretty good chance to be on the third or fourth line next year, and I think he deserves that chance.
Yeah, Nico Sturm is a guy for me, too, that I definitely want to see. I think he's going to be a guy that will probably anchor kind of that third, maybe even the fourth line, just for the next handful of years. I think he's just, like you say, just solid. Yeah. He's responsible, does make mistakes, and that's a guy you want in your lineup, a guy that's just going to go out and do his job. And I think, like, in a way, I think he'll kind of be like Jonas Brodin. You might not always kind of notice things happening on the score sheet, but you're going to watch him on the ice and go, wow, that was a great play. That was a smart play. So him, Kakanen, like you said, and then another guy I'd like to see get just a couple more looks would be Brendan Minnell, defenseman who a lot of offensive upside, I believe, led the AHL in defensive assists last year, if I recall correctly, or pretty cool stat like that. So especially if, you know, Hunt or someone goes down, I'd rather see Minnell than, no offense to Matt Barkowski, but I'd like to see Brendan Minnell get a look and just kind of see what he's made of too, and maybe see if Dumba does move, if he's a guy that can maybe fill that temporary role in the top four until Addison is ready too.
Yep, I had his name on my list too.
All right, let's take a look here. Next question. Who do you think is the most, we touched on this a little bit earlier, but who do you guys think is the most likely to be traded or cut? And I'm wondering if by cut, maybe we can assume that's like bought out. What do you guys think? We touched a little bit maybe on the possibility of like Jordan Greenway, our preference for Dumba Brodin, but are there any other players that you see bought out or maybe moved?
I think that we could possibly see the Parisi trade with the Islanders be brought up again and then bought out, possibly Rask or Dubnyk or both.
Yeah, I agree with pretty much everything you just said there, Justin. I would say the Parisi trade is a little bit more possibly revisited if, well, I mean, you know, the pandemic happened, obviously, and with the salary cap staying flat, I think that's going to make it a little tougher for a team, even like the Islanders, to, you know, want to take on his contract, even with retained and another bad one going the other way, like Andrew Ladd was supposedly going to. So, you know, I could still see that one. If Parisi wants to waive his no move clause, but like we said earlier, Jordan Greenway, and then obviously another obvious one is one of the defensemen in Matt Dumba, Jonas Brodin. If you assume that Guerin will probably at least go shopping for a center, top six center at some point in the offseason.
Yeah, so do you guys think if the Wild go the buyout route that Rask and Dubnyk should be bought out? I think for sure Rask is probably a consensus one, but what do we think about the future of Devan Dubnyk, and should you buy him out?
That's tough because he does have 1 year left on his contract, so do you buy him out or do you just let him play that last year?
Yeah, it's tough. I know he had some personal things happen with his wife and his family this year that were obviously, you know, it's great to hear so far that I think that everything's mostly fine there now that, you know, already when you think of how mental a position goaltending is and when you have thinking of that, what's going on at home when you have, you know, several young children like that. And I don't know, that obviously would have made it even harder to play his position. But at the same time, as much as you can consider that, I mean, I think with how the Wild's goaltending performed this year, specifically him, I just don't know if they can go into next year with Dubnyk and Stalock as their tandem because, you know, yes, he could rebound and be okay and his contract is cheap for only another year. But at the same time, the buyout wouldn't be very expensive or for very long. And because if they're bad again, if he's bad again next year and Stalock is just kind of the same or maybe even a little bit worse, you know, that could really sink their team. So, you know, as much as I would feel bad about that, I think that they're probably going to at least strongly consider it.
So, and then just I pulled up the Islanders salary cap situation on Cap Friendly. And I think for a Parisi trade to work, they'd have to move a lot of things around. Yeah. As of right now, they have $8 million in projected cap space.
Yeah.
And that is with Thomas Greiss, Devin Toews, Ryan Pollock, Andy Green, Tom Kunackle, Matt Barzal, Derek Brassard, and Matt Martin, all either UFAs or RFAs. You know Barzal's going to get a payday. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Pollock and Toews both deserve probably significant raises as well. They had unbelievable years, so... Mm-hmm. I know there was some rumors that the Ladd contract would come back, which would be $5.5 million. But you have to think if they're going to clear cap somehow. I'm not sure that just with their cap situation, especially now with a flat cap, that it's something they can make work out. But who knows?
We'll see. Yeah.
All right. Okay. And let's see. Any more questions that we haven't touched on? Talked about. What to do with Dubnyk. We had one, I think, come in kind of late here from Derek Felska, and we did touch on this a little bit, but he asked, should the NHL keep the rapid-fire first round of the playoffs in the future to kind of speed things up? Having one round in a week isn't so bad. What do you think?
I don't know. I think it's different because of with the best five and their current situation. I think those kind of call for it. Now, I understand why, you know, he thinks that, and you know, it is nice to have it done quicker and not have it drag on for two and a half months. But I think when you're going best seven after a long 82 game season, I think you need to give at least, you know, a day or two between games like they usually do. And especially with this last year, and if next year starts in December, there's going to be a lot of wear and tear on guys' bodies. And I just don't know if you can you know, rush that together like that.
You know, I wouldn't be totally against it because it's been fun. You know, that's the tough one for me to answer, really. But, you know, the way things have gone this year, it's been, like, really fun. One of the funnest times I've watched.
Yeah, I'll throw in a little bit of a compromise. So I'm not in favor of, cutting down the first round to five games. I think the seven games is necessary just from NHL record standpoint.
Yeah.
And just, like, don't change things kind of standpoint. Update Philadelphia to score an empty netter. It's 4-1. So Philadelphia one seed.
Cool.
Got one right. So, but here's my compromise. I feel like oftentimes we see some really close wild card races and it's like, it seems like these fringe teams, the ones really make the push. So, I would think maybe if you want to look at it, this way, what about maybe, so for the wild card spots, instead of them decide after game 82, you take, the 8-9, or the 7, 8, 9, and 10, seven plays 10, eight plays nine, and they battle for the last two wildcard spots in like a five game series.
Interesting.
But maybe where I would look at it, because you know, it seems like I'm gonna be playing desperate. It gives the teams that they play even a little more of an advantage because they already have played five games, a little bit more tired.
Yeah.
If you wanted to expand it, you get, you know, basically two more teams into the playoffs or that get a chance and make sure those wildcard teams really prove it. But
yeah.
I think you play 82 games for a reason, so part of it, I'm kind of in that camp, but I'll never say no to more hockey, so
that's true.
So. All right, and that basically wraps up the mailbag. Hopefully a lot of great content that you guys enjoyed today. We touched on a lot. If there's any more questions you have or feedback you have, be sure to leave it on the podcast Twitter account, at SoundTheFoghorn, all one word. And guys, remind the listeners where they can find you and your work as well.
You can find me on Twitter at ZBWildNation_HW, and you can find my writing at Hockey Wilderness.
You can find me at DEAST2004. You can also find me at CapriSubC for the CapriSub Countdown. And you can also find my work at MNW Prospects.
All right. And you can find me on Twitter at B_Marsh92. The play-in rounds and stuff wraps up tomorrow, so we'll have plenty to talk about on the next episode. Stay tuned, and thank you for listening to Sound.